850. It is 9 o'clock. Exactly at 9:15, we will begin our discussion with Alton Maddox. But until then, I want to give you reason to think about the fact that it is Alton Maddox Day on WBAI. I need in total, please, in the tally room, I do need to see a clean slate, because we are setting a record here today. There you go. And let us know the total as we move. 212-209-2950. Alton Maddox is not going to talk until we fill that board up. That's the order of the day. We're not playing here. This is a day for serious, committed people, and this is your test. If you are serious and committed, you'll be checking in with your pledge. Make your pledge, and then we will know you're serious. If you're fooling around, don't call. 212-209-2950. If you don't have courage, do not call. We want people who are courageous. We want people who are the people who stand up when things get tough. Those are the people we want. 212-209-2950. Let's give you some music so you can think this over. Music to soothe the soul while you do what you got to do. 212-209-2950. Thank you. 212-209-2950. We have 6 lines available. Don't let them go by. 6 lines are available. Thank you. Keep calling. I left you alone for a minute, and what did you do? Oh, no, you didn't fall up at all. You didn't. You are still there. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. 212-209-2950. Here's what I want you to make a pledge for today. I want you to commit to making a pledge today. Why? Because the fight is on, and we're all fighting the same fight. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. Make this commitment today. If you have called and you weren't able to make your pledge just yet, please, we are depending on you to be stalwart soldiers today and call back. 212-209-2950. If you make a pledge of $250 today, we are going to have an evening with Alton Maddox. In that evening with Alton Maddox, and we're hoping enough people will make a pledge so that we can fill Madison Square Garden. That's how big we want this to be. We want it to be this big. This evening with Alton Maddox, in which he lays out this case in full. You better come prepared. It's going to be a comprehensive lecture on race, history, and the law. Race, history, and the law. And I can tell you, I will guarantee you, that in this lecture, pieces of information, substantial pieces of information, will be made known to you, exclusively to you, that nobody else has. 212-209-2950. If you make a pledge of $200 today using your Visa, American Express, or MasterCard, just make the pledge of $200, you will get a copy, and it's going to be a historic document, a copy of the brief that Alton Maddox will submit to the Appellate Division's Second Department, in which he tackles the issue of prosecutorial misconduct in the Brawley case. This is a historic document. You will be able to have your very own copy. 212-209-2950. If you make a pledge of $150, we say thank you with four 90-minute tapes in which very specific areas of the Brawley case are expanded upon and explained in great detail. 212-209-2950. Tell your friends, tell everybody you know. It is Alton Maddox Day on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Make sure that you tell them that. And today is the day to walk the walk. 212-209-2950. I mean it. We are not fooling around today. We have work to do. This is the kind of work that activists do. We don't sit around. Like Alton Maddox, we are on the move all the time. 212-209-2950. We will get to learn more about this case at 9:15, but it's 9:08, and we have 7 minutes in which to do some serious work. 212-209-2950. If you use your Visa, American Express, or MasterCard, it allows us to process your premium much faster, but it's not the only way. Your check home money order is also very good. You can pay in installments if you wish. But we are interested in you making the commitment today. 212-209-2950. Thank you for those calls. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. We have room for you. Don't be afraid. Make your calls. But again, all through the day, we are going to be lifting up and celebrating and commemorating the stalwart soldier among us. His name is Alton H. Maddox, Jr. Pick up the phone, call your friends, let them know. It is serious business here today on WBAI. You know, earlier this morning, a person called me on the phone, and I was in the pledge room, and she said, you know, I was looking for something with more grit to it. Hey, you ain't seen grit yet. 212-209-2950. Keep it up. Thank you very much. You have four lines available. 212-209-2950. Today is Alton Maddox Day. That's all you need to know. Pick up your phone, make your call for your pledge of $250. For $250, you will be invited exclusively to an evening with Alton Maddox, in which very significant revelations will be made about this case. You will not have heard these things before, but they will be laid out to you in great detail on this evening. We are hoping enough people will pledge that we can fill up Madison Square Garden, Yankee Stadium. That's what we want. We want a Yankee Stadium Day kind of briefing. 212-209-2950. We have six lines available. I don't see six people calling in. Again, we're not playing. It is 9:10. We have 5 minutes. Let's move it. Move it along. 212-209-2950. This is a call to you. Make your pledge for $250. You and a friend, you get to attend this very special evening with Alton Maddox, in which he discusses history, race, and the law. You make a pledge of $200, we send you right away. Of course, if you use Visa, American Express, or MasterCard, you get it right away. The briefing will be finished by next week. You will get a copy. It is a historic document because it will be his answer to the Appellate Division's Second Department, a challenge to the prosecutorial misconduct in the Brawley case. 212-209-2950. This case is far from over, folks. Far from over. If you make a pledge of $150, we send you four 90-minute tapes in which highlights of this case will be revisited and explored in great detail. Now, we have seven lines available, and Alton Maddox is not going to say a word. I think it is insulting to have this man in our midst and us not doing the proper thing, the proper African thing, of giving him a very warm welcome. Would you allow me, would you assist me, would you encourage me to encourage him to stay with us for a long time today? And that will happen with your pledges. 212-209-29. Thank you very much. 212-209-2950. We are doing very serious work here today. We are not fooling around. We are not fooling around. The time has come to commit to doing serious community work. Here's a person who has been doing that all of his life. All of his life he has been doing this, and we need to welcome him properly, in a proper African way. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. There are four calls on the line. We have room for six more. 212-209-2950. Making a pledge today of $250 or $200 or $150 is not the only way to support WBAI. You become a member here for a pledge of $50. 25 if you're a senior citizen or a person on fixed income. The idea is we want your membership as well. We want to know that this radio station is reaching you and that it is meaning something to you. It is giving you something that you cannot get anywhere else. So you become a member, and it tells us that we have an obligation to meet your informational needs. 212-209-2950. So we need you to make that commitment to become a member. And, of course, any amount at all that you choose to give, we will gladly receive and we will honor. 212-209-2950. Come on. We have room for you. We want a proper welcome. We're doing it all right, but it's just all right. We can't settle for all right. We have to do things excellently. Excellence is the name of the game. We are privileged today to have an excellent attorney, an excellent representation of the law, an excellent advocate, an excellent adjutant. An excellent person is in our midst. We cannot underperform. It will not be allowed today. Underperformance will not be allowed. It is beneath us to underperform. So let us perform excellently. Make your commitment and make your pledge. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. We have at least six lines open to you right this minute. And we have 1 minute before we go to Alton Maddox. He is right here. But I am saying, nope, we are not going to have you talk until the folks do what we got to do. And all day we are going to do this. Because we want New York to know that Alton Maddox is not alone. We want New York to know that the community in whose behalf he has been struggling all these years, the community stands with him. And we want New York to know that this station will continue to cover this case. This station is committed to the entire truth about this case. That's what we want New York to know. 212-209-2950. We have 1 minute to go. 1 minute, we can have five additional calls, and then we will properly have welcomed Alton Maddox to the microphones. 212-209-2950. Are you with me on this? I want to know. If you are a slacker, don't call. In fact, turn this radio off right now. If you're a person who plays games, turn your radio off. We're not in the mood to play games. If you're a person who is just a dilettante, we're not interested in dilettantes. We want people who are committed. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right. You've done your jobs nicely. I need to see a reflection in the tote board because I know we've done very well to welcome Alton Maddox to the microphones. And with that, we begin officially our broadcast of this program. Thank you so much. Continue calling, please. You're doing the right thing. Continue calling as we go. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Alton Maddox, and welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Eutrice.
Well, I had to get a little, you know, I just think it is important. If you're going to be here, as I said, I think it is important that New York know that this struggle continues, that you are committed to seeing this struggle to the end, to the very end, and that all of your life has been about service to the community, and the community on this day has a chance to say, through WBAI, has a chance to say thank you and keep up the good work.
Well, I certainly want to thank you and WBAI as well as the community for the support that is being given, and certainly for the long-standing support from yourself in this struggle and from the community, because it has been 11 years of struggle, particular struggle, and that's 11 years since I was initially suspended. But actually, my entire legal career has been one of struggle, and it could not have been possible without the support of the community. I felt as though that's where my heart lied. I do not believe that we as a people can go too far until we get some obstacles and some barriers out of the way first. And I've chosen to take that path because it's very difficult to run an obstacle course. It's best to clear the path of the obstacles first before you attempt to run an obstacle course.
Yeah, well, let's start with where things are, because during the course of this day, and I want listeners to know that this will be a pretty extended day for you here at WBAI, because there are many aspects to what you do and what you have done and what you intend to continue doing that the community needs to know. And I couldn't think of a better person, and we here couldn't think of a better person to lift up as an example of what true dedication to community struggle is than you.
Well, you know, that reminds me of an editorial that the New York Post did prior to my suspension, and in it they said that the reason why Alton Maddox must be disciplined and disciplined harshly is because he may become a role model and other people may get ideas. And so it's very dangerous to elevate someone like me because that's not what the system really wants.
No, it's not what they want at all.
And, you know, when the system invests those 3 years of law school, you know, when they open up the pathway for many of us to go to law school, it really wasn't with the intention that we would take our assignments seriously. Hmm. You know, we were told back in the late 60s when many of us started in law schools that otherwise were not available. And that's the reason why the struggles of people who've gone before us are so important, and we owe to them, because up until the latter part of the 60s, most blacks could not go to law school, even if they had tremendous grade point averages and had done extremely well on the LSAT. It was just not available because the rooms were not there, and the segregation and the other barriers were there, and it wasn't possible. So when many of us got that opportunity, it was only because other people gave us so much. And, you know, it's like any other debt. I mean, some people attempt to repay it. Other people simply ignore it as long as they can. And some people might repay some of it if you dun them or knock on that door or bring a lawsuit. But, you know, that's the way debts are. And fortunately, I have to live with my conscience. So when I came out, I realized that had it not been for others, I would not have been practicing law and would have been done doing something more traditional, you know, like teaching school or something of that nature, because those were the only fields that were really available to us at that particular time. So I have felt as though that I have tried to satisfy my debt and my obligation to those who have come before me. I think every person of African ancestry is similarly situated, whether you went into the law or medicine or whether you are just doing ordinary so-called work, mm-hmm. Or menial tasks. We still owe it to somebody else who have come mm-hmm. before us and made it possible, and each one of us do owe a debt. And we have to live with ourselves, because it's more or less like the honor system. There's really nobody to sue us, you know, in terms of these things. So we have to live our own consciences, and some of us are satisfying that debt, and in several instances, many of us are not.
Well, let's talk about how you got into this business in the first place. You were born in the South, in Georgia. How did you end up with law as an objective?
Well, it really wasn't the objective of my mother. She taught school, and my father was a preacher. And I suppose at that particular time, when they gave me advice about law, I just took it that they didn't really know what they were talking about. And I reckon to a large extent they probably didn't in an experimental sense,
yeah.
In that they had never really experimented. But, you know, one thing about our people is that we seem to have knowledge beyond our experiences mm-hmm. and things that we can't attach ourselves to. But in any event, I was hard-headed, and they said, look, you know, lawyers are nothing but liars. And, you know, and we are very religious people, and although we want to make sure that you go to college, and we're going to stand behind that and finance it, but we don't want you to be a liar. And so, you know, my mother particularly was really against that. You know, I mean, the whole idea that I wanted to be a lawyer just really cut across everything that she stood for. She really wanted me to be a doctor. But I grew up at a time when segregation was rampant, and I just saw too many instances of injustices all around me. And it just, because of that, I wanted to do something, you know.
Yeah, but you say you grew up in a time with segregation. You're just uh-huh. talking about just the other day.
That's true.
And that's shocking, really, because when people talk like this, like mm-hmm. the way you're talking, you expect them to be in their 70s or 80s, but you're in your 50s.
Yeah, and, you know, when I started school, it was a two-room shack, wooden shack, no indoor toilets, no such thing as a library, any of the things that are normally associated with a school. It was just simply two couple of rooms and some chairs and some books that were 25 or 30 years old that had been, you know, given to whites first. Mm-hmm. And then after they just simply could use them no more. I mean, they were just totally obsolete. Then they turned them over to us. And that's basically the type of school. There's no indoor heating system. We had to go out in the end of the day and chop wood and bring it back for the next day. And many of the children had to walk many miles to school back and forth on the days that they could actually attend school because sharecropping was still very much in the mix. In the South when I grew up, and that meant that every available hand had to be in the fields during the times when you were either chopping cotton or picking cotton.
And again, this is not the 1800s or the early 1900s that we're talking about.
No, these are the 1950s.
My goodness.
Right. Yeah, these are the 1950s.
So why did you go to school?
You know, decided I really wanted to get out of Georgia, and you know, and but then you got to remember this was 1962, so it wasn't a lot of places. I did have an uncle who lived in Ohio. He wanted me to go to Ohio State, but I had really grew up in the South and had been taught in a segregated system, and I had gone to Columbus and had observed Ohio State, but I didn't really get that feel at that time because really there was no blacks at Ohio State. And so I chose to go to Howard University in D.C., and I think it was an excellent choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me an opportunity to meet a lot of people, and many of those associations continued, you know, until some of them have made the transition now, like Kwame Ture. And then there have been others, you know, who, although we were not there at the same time, we've developed close association, like Lewis Clayton Jones, and myself and others. So it was a great experience to have gone to Howard during that particular period. And then I came back to Georgia and got more involved in civil rights in the 60s, and then chose to go to law school. And decided that I wanted to stay in the South because that was really my real interest. And I chose to go to University of Georgia Law School, which I thought at the time was a great choice because it was right there in Athens. It wasn't really that far away from home. And I could go back and forward. And I went over there. And unfortunately, I became a cultural shock to the students at the University of Georgia. There had only been two blacks who had entered before I did. One had already graduated. The other one was there, and he eventually became chief judge of the Georgia Supreme Court. But when I went there, I had a whole different spin on things because I had really been influenced by the civil rights movement and by the Black Power movement. And so I went up with a dashiki and afro. And
you had a fro?
Right, I had a real fro at that time.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just more than anybody at the University of Georgia could take.
Yeah.
And one thing led to the other, and then there were derogatory statements sometime in class, because you got to remember, none of these students, or most of these students had never gone to school with any blacks at all. You know, and so they, and the only blacks they knew were blacks who were subservient.
Mm-hmm.
And when you went to the University of Georgia Law School and you were black, they just took it that you had to be subservient. And I remember Bob Benham, you know, telling me that the first year he was there, he was wearing a suit every day, and this white fellow from South Georgia came up to him and said, you know, Bob, you know, where I'm from, Negroes like yourself only wear a suit during the week if you're a preacher or if you're going to a funeral. And you're not a preacher, and you're certainly not going to a funeral every day over here at the University of Georgia Law School. And it just bothers me that someone like yourself will wear a suit every day when you know you should not. And he said that he had called his daddy and had told him about Bob. And his daddy said, well, why don't we just offer to pay Bob schooling at the University of Georgia since he's already there. We can't get him out of there. He's already there. But we will pay him not to wear a suit and tie every day. And it came back, and that's what they offered. They said, look, if you just take off your suit and tie and just come to school like we are, so we commonly identify blacks.
Yeah.
That we will at that time pay your tuition and pay all your room and board.
Yeah.
And
if you look the part.
If you look the part, yeah. You know. And so obviously when I came up with the afro and the dashiki, you know, they were wishing for Bob there. You know, that suit didn't look so bad. You know. When they saw the afro and the dashiki. So I spent nearly a year at Georgia, but I had to leave.
Yeah,
and,
why?
Well, because, one, they were not ready for me. And, you know, the dean of the law school had, well, in fact, actually all of the students really petitioned that I be removed from the law school. They said they just could not tolerate myself. They could not tolerate my arrogance. I was not thankful to be there at a time when I should be thankful that I did not want to join their legal fraternities or anything like that, and the other two blacks had. And I just didn't really fit in. It was a grave mistake. Now, on the other hand, you got to remember, I was the first black who went to Georgia without any so-called affirmative action. I mean, I just, you know, the LSAT scores and stuff that I had taken had qualified me beyond any of that But that didn't matter to them academically. It was just my attitude. And so actually then some of the professors and others came to me and said, look, you're not going to have a productive 3 years at Georgia if you last that long, because the dean had actually said that you got to go. I mean, the student body is just, they just can't take it. And so I packed my bags and I left. And for a while I became disillusioned in law school, and I did some other things. But then, you know, law was just in my blood, I suppose, to want to just stand, well, not so much the law in terms of the way it is, but just to the injustices and fighting injustices and fighting in the courtroom. That was more of the inclination. And I just, you know, contacted some people at the last minute and various law schools. And I tried to come with the best financial package that I could get at that point, because when I had renewed my interest in going to law school, it was really too late to apply.
Mm.
And, you know, and there were several schools I was admitted to, but the school that offered the best financial package was in Boston, Boston College. And so me and my wife and my son, we went on off to Boston, and that was another trip. Because it was like moved from down south to up south, because you had a South Boston attitude up there.
Yeah,
and I think you recall even sometime later where they beat a black lawyer up there wrapped in an American flag and beat him.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't easy in Boston as well, but that is where I went to law school and I completed it. And then I came to New York.
Well, what happened once you got to New York?
Well,
you graduated, okay, you have your J.D.
Yep.
And you're a Juris Doctor, and you come to New York City. First of all, why New York?
Well, I tell you, you know, to be very honest, I came to New York because I wanted to be incognito. I didn't want to be anonymous. I mean, I wanted to be anonymous. I didn't want to be well-known. I really was trying to work my way back to Georgia. But, you know, this is part of history, too. The bar exams were being tested in a racially discriminatory fashion. And, you know, there were lawsuits during that time. Because once blacks were able to go to law school and they were in law school, then the next hurdle was getting past the bar exams.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have these law examiners in these various states who, through one means or another, are identifying papers submitted by black law students or black applicants to the bar. And they were in wholesale fashion just rejecting a lot of people. And so my real fear was that, aside from just that, my real fear was that they had my name listed somewhere and they were waiting for me, because, you know, they track you. And so I decided what I would do is to go somewhere where I wasn't known and sort of, you know, do some things there for a while. And then after a few years, sort of slip into Georgia, you know, without taking the bar exam. I mean, taking the bar review course, anything like that. And just taking the exam, because I figured it's an element of surprise. So that was really the reason why I came to New York. But then when I got here, I started working up in Harlem. And I mean, the problem was just monumental of our people at that particular time. This was in the early 70s. And they were just so monumental on all different levels. And I just got involved with a lot of people, Queen Mother Moore, Reverend Tim Mitchell, Reverend Charles Kenyatta, Reverend Ken Locke, a lot of local activists, you know, in Harlem and a number of other people, and just started tackling problems. And, you know, after a period of time, I said, well, gee, you know, I mean, if I'm looking for injustices, I mean, Georgia couldn't have any more injustices than what I'm looking at right now. And I certainly couldn't handle any more injustices in Georgia that I'm handling there. And I just sort of got stuck on New York. And, you know, and just one thing led to the other. And, you know, and this is where I've been. I mean, it wasn't my original intentions. But once I got here and just got involved and, you know, and developed a love affair with the people, it was just hard to leave. But it wasn't my original intention. My intention was to go back to South and to really fight the injustices there, because that's what I thought the injustices were. And I was just going to lay over in New York for 2 or 3 years. And then when they sort of forgot that I was coming back, you know, slide through. And that's why I eventually did. I did go down. I did
a stealth?
Do
a stealth back in Georgia?
And that's what happened. I did go back to Georgia. I took the bar exam after a few years, and I just quietly went down there one day, you know, and took the exam. And, you know, and the thing about, you know, is that what you really have to try to do in terms of going passing bar exams, especially during that time, I said, well, I know one thing. If they're not, you know, putting a little check mark by my paper, you know, then at least I have to sound very European, you know, in my writing. You know what I mean? So make sure they wouldn't catch any, you know, hint that I was anything, you know, but a European. And, you know, and that's basically what I did, because actually over the years, I mean, this subject is not discussed that much now, but even back then there were bar examiners, law examiners, who actually said that they could identify a person racially by that person's writing, you know. And so, you know, you had to try to come up with these machinations, so to speak, to get by another obstacle. That's the reason why I said that it's hard just trying to run an obstacle course. It's easy just trying to get rid of all the obstacles first.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, where it is Alton Maddox Day. We are in the midst of our fundraising drive. We're coming toward the end, but this is the day that we are pausing to commemorate and celebrate and lift up a stalwart soldier in the struggle for justice. His name is Alton Maddox Jr., and this is how we are commemorating this day. As you listen, and we're coursing through a great day today with a number of aspects to it, but I need to know that you are continuing to make your calls at 212-209-2950 as we proceed with the day. 212-209-2950. I need a current tally, please, because I know the tally is lagging. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Let me tell you what it is that I'm asking you to make a pledge for, to support. Make a pledge of $250 to this station, and you will have a special evening with Alton Maddox, in which he will be coursing through some very important aspects of his legal history in this topic titled History, Race, and the Law. You and the friend, you and the guest, get to attend this very special evening, and we're hoping to have enough people to rent Madison Square Garden for this event. 212-209-2950. We want everybody in the community to turn out for this very special event. That is why we haven't scheduled a place yet. We don't want to schedule a place and then have to change it. We will get a place as soon as we know that you are on board. If you make a pledge of $200, we say thank you with a copy of the brief that is going to be submitted to the Appellate Division, Second Department, regarding prosecutorial misconduct in the Brawley case. This briefing is actually Alton Maddox's briefing that will be submitted to the court. It will be a historical document, and for those of you interested in legal history, you will want to have this copy of the brief. 212-209-2950, that is for a pledge of $200. If you make a pledge of $150, we say thank you with four 90-minute tapes. The tapes are highlights of specific aspects, key aspects, critical aspects of the Brawley case. 212-209-2950. Now, if you want to have everything associated with the case, the briefings and the tapes, you make a pledge of $300. 212-209-2950. You are assisting WBAI in being of further assistance to the community by allowing us to bring you the information. We have been doing so for a long time, especially on this case, and it is now at a critical juncture where it will very likely end up, I believe, before the U.S. Supreme Court. This is a very important test case. It has been almost a dozen years in the making, and it is important to see it through. Alton Maddox is committed to seeing it through. We are committed to covering it all the way and sharing the information as the developments occur. So we will continue very shortly. But again, let's take this short break and put on some incentive music. This is incentive music for you to pick up the phone and make your calls. 212-209-2950. I need to see some activity on the phone lines. All right. All right. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Thank you very much. We want very serious people to pick up the phone and make your calls. And all of you who are members of community organizations, I need to know that you're in the house today and accounted for. 212-209-2950. Make your pledges. Make your pledges. And of course, payable by Visa, American Express, or MasterCard, by check or money order, payable in installments as well. 212-209-2950. Call your friends and let them know that it is Alton Maddox Day, all day today, on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. 212-209-2950. It's Alton Maddox on the case, as it were. 212-209-2950. Thank you. Pick up the phone. Make your calls. We have 6 lines available. We're going to do this for about 10 minutes, and we go back to regular programming. 212-209-2950. Update, we're told that we're getting an unusual number of very racist, hateful calls. That is okay. It is okay because it's not from us, it's to us, and it's what some people choose to bring to the phone system. And this is why, again, our volunteers are just the best people on the face of the earth. Some people cannot deal with the idea that we are confronting racism, so they export it, and they hope that we will import it, and we are saying no. Those of you who understand what we are doing, we are just expecting that you will be stalwart soldiers and keep up your persistence and making sure that your calls are coming in. We do get, I'm told that we are getting an unusual number of hateful, racist calls. That's okay. That's what we've been up against from day one. And I understand it. And I understand why people will be uncomfortable with the idea that we will lift up an African man right in the city of New York for all of New York to say, we honor this man because of his work in our community. And I am not stepping away from that one inch. Not an inch of ground, not a blade of grass. 212-209-2950. So those of us who understand what we are doing here, the work that we are doing, I'm asking you to be persistent soldiers. It is a struggle. This is what it's all about. Even in the so-called progressive community, you have to deal with racism. We have to deal with it. And we're up to it. We are soldiers, and that's what we will do. 212-209-2950. It's all right. It's all right. We will do it. We will do it. We want the activist community, activists of all stripes, all colors, who understand what it is to represent oppressed people. We want you to be in today, in the mix, in the number of people who are calling, and say to the haters, to the people who are filled with hate and racist thoughts, that you will not prevail. This is not a station that will accommodate your hate and racism. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. This is a hero of our community and of all communities, if you recognize and understand what a champion of oppressed people looks like and does. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much for those calls. We have a couple more minutes before we go on. 212-209-2950. Thank you so much for making your pledges. And again, use your Visa, American Express, or MasterCard. It helps us process your premiums very, very quickly. We are looking to have a major gathering for this event, an evening with Alton Maddox, and of course it will be a community event. 212-209-2950. There's still people, and this is one of the things, Alton, that we'll get to discuss, that in the progressive community, the vestiges of racism are so deep that people are uncomfortable about confronting it and dealing with it, and yet, if you raise it, you become a racist, you see? And it's a very interesting dynamic, but we've been dealing with it. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Thank you. Those of you who are calling, please call your friends and let them know. Today on WBAI is Alton Maddox Day, and we are celebrating and commemorating and encouraging this hero who is continuing to confront the powers that be. This is, in fact, what it's all about. This is free speech radio. Some people would rather not have it this way. We are supposed to have permitted speech. They would like to permit us to speak. They would like to have us submit applications to find out if it's okay to have this discussion. And just like you, I did not apply for permission to have this discussion. And if anybody is waiting for that application, I suggest that you hold your breath. I'm not applying for permission to have this discussion. We are going straight ahead. Forward ever, backward never. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Thank you very much. Those of you who understand what we are doing, I know that you will continue to persist. Tell your friends that the conspiracy apparently is still on. We are still back in Georgia of 19... This is Up South. Alton, welcome to Up South, where we are still fighting racism, confronting it head on. There are people who will say, we shouldn't be having this discussion on the air. And they are the enlightened ones. These are the progressive ones. These are the ones who have liberal credentials. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. These are the ones who talk about free speech. But first we have to apply for permission as people of color to have the privilege of speaking. 212-209-2950. I will make no such applications. Not now, not ever. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. Please do continue calling, those of you who understand what struggle is all about. And they are of all stripes, people of all stripes who understand what struggle is all about. Those of you who are liberated will understand what this is all about. 212-209-2950. We have 5 minutes left before we go on to the next segment. Please do make this a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. 212-209-2950. Thank you for making those calls. We still have five lines available if you call in right now, and we have 5 minutes. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much. You're doing wonderfully, really, you are. You're doing fantastically. You're doing just fine. 212-209-2950. We do know that there are racists among us. There are people who are doing some very evil things, but that's them. And they will continue to do it because that's what we're talking about, calling them out. And they apparently are responding. We're calling them out of the woods that they're in, the intellectual woods that they're in. We're calling them out. 212-209-2950, and they're responding. They're there because we have identified them, and they are responding. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We're hoping that those of you who are far more enlightened will outnumber those who are not. 212-209-2950. Thank you very much for your calls. Thank you. You're doing just well. And call a friend and let them know that right here on WBAI today is Alton Maddox Day. And we do not care if it doesn't suit certain people in the United States. 212-209-2950. Geez, Alton, so long ago you left Georgia in this kind of activity, and here we are, right, in liberal, liberated New York. And we're still running into the trenchant racism. People, we just had a volunteer come in, literally in tears, saying that the calls were so ugly, they were so nasty, the so filled with hate. She was actually in tears. But we go through this a lot. And we've been going through this a lot here at WBAI. People who are insisting that they simply cannot psychologically cope with a change in which they perceive that there is now at a decision-making level a kind of person, you know, like the guy who is wearing the suit. We have to apply for permission. I don't understand this. And what's more is that there is extreme anger and hatred over the fact that I have no intention of applying for permission to be me. I have no intention of doing this. I never have done it in my life. But to have people reduced to tears, and these are the enlightened people, these are the people who will claim that they are the liberals, they are progressives, they are the nice ones. You know, they're not those hate-filled Klan people from the South who would hide behind sheets. They are the people who are lovely, wonderful, law-abiding, decent folks here in the city of New York. Just like that picture that you referred to it in Boston, of the black man being attacked with an American flag. My goodness, this is the era, and this is what people don't understand. This is really where the work is, that activists in this day and age have to still deal with this thread, this permanent thread in the fabric of American life, and that is race oppression. People simply will not let go of the notion that skin color determines one of two things. If you have melanin in your skin, too much melanin, you are to be subservient. You have to ask permission to wear a suit during the middle of the week. And if you happen to be Caucasian, that you are ordained and predestined by some higher authority always to rule. And that this is what would hold us together. This is what would keep us, moving along.
Well, you know, one thing, Utrice, I remember the story that G.T. Weusi told some years ago. And I suppose when I first came to New York, a large part of the legal arm of the movement was in the hands of several white attorneys, liberal attorneys. And it was just a matter of course that people would, in fact, go to them. And when I came to town, naturally, or I want to be a part of the struggle. I want to be a part of the legal arm of the struggle. I mean, it was the struggle of our own people, and I didn't see anything wrong with a black attorney saying, you know, I want to be a part of it. I mean, this is our struggle. I understand this struggle, and participate. And I wasn't trying to ice anybody out. I just wanted to my responsibility. I want to carry my responsibility out. And it created an outrage, ultimately, among many attorneys. And G2 tells of a time when he went down to the village, and there was this meeting. And G2 had been, and still is, very supportive of many of the things that I do and have done, and we work very closely together on many issues. And my name came up. Well, and the question was, well, G2, why would you, you know, associate with him now? Why would you support him? And, you know, and G2 said that he told this group that, you know, I'm appreciative of all the things that you've done. And there are many things that we will be doing together in the future. There are many things we've done in the past together. In terms of this struggle. But he went on to tell this group, but you got to remember that although we have worked together, we've always wanted our own. Now, we always wanted someone who was black, who understood the law, and who would confront the problems of our people. And my working with other groups did not negate the fact that we always wanted our own. And I think that people have to understand that as a people, and from various groups, coalitions, and et cetera, that if we are really going to be able to work together, that the decision-making powers and ability just cannot rest in one group. And everybody else is just expected habitually to take a back seat. Because the problem in this country is that people operating too much on habit. You know, this is what we've done in the past, and even though there's no law to say you can't be in the decision-making position, but the reality of it is you just never been in it, and nor should you ever get in it, and you ought to understand that. And people don't understand. There are people who come along and say, I don't understand that. I mean, if I am the best at this, or if I understand this, I do a great job at this, I don't understand why, just because of tradition or because of habit, that I have to take a back seat. And that's where many of the problems really arise. And so even I see among people saying, well, we need these coalitions. But you can't have a coalition where only one group is really giving the orders. Mm-hmm. You can't have a coalition where maybe the blacks are the mouthpieces, you know, and they're running their mouths, but they're really not writing the script. All right? You know? And we look at some blacks who are out there running their mouths as though they are writing the script. And they are not. They are just simply mouthpieces. There come a time when we have to write the script. I mean, we have to be the directors. We have to be the producers. We have to be all of the casting directors, all these other people that make this really happen. And that is a revolution in itself. You know, and this struggle has been going on for many years. Kwame Ture talked about the time in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, where at some point, you know, they said, look, we got to work out by ourselves because people do not understand that, you know, we're capable of doing some of these things ourselves. You know, and, you know, you had many talented young blacks in the 60s, but you had other people who said, well, no, we should be writing the script. You know, you just act out what we tell you to act out. We say go to Mississippi, you go to Mississippi. We tell you to say this, you say this. We tell you go to Alabama, you go to Alabama. We say this in Alabama, you say this. But we write the script. And I think that if we are going to work together across race lines, then we must understand and appreciate that every group wants their own. And there's nothing unnatural about it. And the other people who've always had a monopoly on these things have to begin to share with those other groups.
But you're correct. It does not negate anything. This is one of the things that Paul Robeson would point out. The fact that he was more and more immersed in his identity as an African man in America did not negate his ability to recognize everybody else's identity. But there is this presumption, again, that people of color are unable to make these complicated, you know, you are so monodimensional. You're so, you're just so flat in your intellect.